Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Welcome to Lost in the Static, as you heard from our open. Now, this is my first, I'm going to say solo show because Scott's not around, but I do have a couple of guests with me that I'll let introduce themselves in a moment. But first, I want to tell them, and I guess you guys too, adamandeve.com. If you go there and you use the promo code STATIC, you get 50% off a single item. You get free shipping. You get a free mystery gift, and you get 3 fuck DVDs for free. I mean, all right, guys, introduce yourself and tell people, is that a good deal or what?
That's a fantastic deal, and I am Brian Wilson, and I like to squeeze things.
And I am Jim O'Rear, and also think that's a fucking great deal, and I like to squeeze things after they've been squeezed.
Yes, and then I like to fuck it.
Wouldn't
it's
you
kind of like a squeeze then fuck, I guess.
As long as Jim's not the one you're squeezing.
Oh, no.
Not at all. No. What will give you that idea? What pictures have you seen?
Yes.
Don't believe anything.
No, that's Photoshopped.
I could tell it was shopped. I could tell by the pixels.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
So,
yeah.
Since I'm probably going to fuck it up anyway, do you guys want to tell the audience a little bit about who you are?
Okay. Jim, I'm going to introduce you. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Jim O'Rear. He's right next to me.
Oh, why, thank you. I'm Jim O'Rear. I am an actor, stuntman, screenwriter, filmmaker, blah, 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 blah,
Fluffer.
Blah, everything like that. Mainly in horror and science fiction films. That's, I guess, what I'm most known for.
See, Jim, I got to interrupt you there. I disagree.
Yeah.
I think you're most known for the most influential, groundbreaking television show that no one's ever heard of before.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Exactly. I was going to bring that up, but since you brought it up, Underground Entertainment is a show that Brian and I started 20 years ago and, for a Warner Brothers affiliate, and we were one at the time that we did it. 21 right now.
We are able to not have to, we can buy beer legally, which is great.
And it was a show on a Warner Brothers affiliate that broke new ground in television and pushed what was allowed and not allowed on TV, and covered lots of cool genre stuff, horror, science fiction, comic books, music, all that kind of stuff. Things that you really couldn't find on television, covered in a completely different way. It won some awards. And then quickly disappeared.
Yes.
But is back now.
Yes.
It is back now? Because I saw the I'm going to use the term documentary that you guys made, which is really akin more to wanting to suck Spinal Tap's dick. But I saw your documentary.
I think more Ruddle Dick.
Yeah, it's more Ruddle Dick. And it's kind of like a back rub to Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Under a rub out.
Yeah.
Well, where can people see this? Can Underground Entertainment the movie?
What was that?
Can people see Underground Entertainment the movie? Can they buy it, or do they got to wait for a film festival? And we're going to get into the trouble you had in Texas in a little bit.
Depending on when this airs,
it will air the second week of November.
Okay, well then this is then the world premiere is pretty much a moot point. because we're world premiering this theatrically this Friday the 28th. After that, I guess I'll introduce myself too now since we haven't done that. I'm Brian Wilson, not the Beach Boy Brian Wilson. Oh no, I'm much, much poorer. I'm also an actor, filmmaker person, but I've done a lot more TV and radio stuff, and mostly in the St. Pete, Tampa and Jacksonville, Southern Georgia area. And also worked in Orlando and have done a lot of TV work.
Did you ever work outside of Hick Country?
Yes. I'm actually just new to Tennessee. I've only been here about 6-7 months, mainly because I just detested the 12-hour drive each way to get to Jim from St. Pete, and I just couldn't bear driving through Atlanta again. So we made the big move up here so we could finish the movie, work on a bunch of other things because we have a ton of projects looming. Done a lot of music stuff and been portrayed John Lennon for a lot of years with Beatlemania groups and British Invasion at Epcot for years and years and years. And now I'm up here, and Jim and I are getting ready to launch the big pop shot that is UE the movie. And to answer your question about when it will be available on DVD, take it, Jim!
Well, we are currently negotiating some deals right now with some interested distributors. And we're hoping to go ahead and finalize that soon after the world theatrical premiere, which as Brian said, is October 28th. It'll be done. Time this airs, you may be able to find it on video on demand and iTunes and stuff like that, as well as probably not too long after that on DVD. So it's going to be coming up here pretty quick.
So you guys would have an objection if I bootlegged the screener you sent me?
Oh, please, and just upload the shit out of it. That would be awesome. That'd be great. All that hard work down the toilet, that'd be great. I would love that. But the
damn,
one thing
you guys are killjoys, you know? You guys are killjoys to a pirate.
Well, that's the funny thing is we, it would be kind of like pirating from a pirate, because there's a lot of things we did, you know, with the show and even with this movie that are very pirate arg-esque type of activities and mindsets. So it would kind of like be like robbing from a thief, I mean, really, at this point.
Exactly.
But no, the DVD is going to have a lot of extras. We went ahead and authored our own as a spec for distributors, and we've got our extra features, bonus stuff, the director's commentary, the delete. As long as the movie is, believe it or not, there was actually more shit. To keep it from beating roots on running time, we decided to cut it as much as we did, and there was actually things that just didn't make it in the movie that we were just, damn it, there's no place for that, or no time for it, but we decided to put a nice little extras package together, and also the three alternate endings, which I don't think any documentary has ever had in the history of humans.
I've seen some simian documentaries that have alternate endings, so it's a good thing you threw out that qualifier.
Exactly. You have to be very, very descriptive and explicit with people, because I notice most people are just fucking stupid.
Well, and then
Walmart.
I am going to say, I better get a copy of this DVD when it comes out. Hint, hint.
That's more of like a threat.
Kind of. Well, you know,
I'm not threatening because I won't do anything to you if you don't. I just might delete your episode afterwards.
Better.
Yeah, after it's all said and done, you may go, oh, this one needs to go down the tube.
I mean, the show didn't suck, but that fucking interview was horrible.
All right, on a more serious note, though, you guys had some trouble showing this movie in, I believe it was Austin, or am I wrong on the city?
Indiana,
okay. Can you tell us a little bit about the trouble you had? And after I've seen them, I saw the movie and I was like, what was the big fucking deal with all this these problems?
That's our motto.
Exactly. That's what we said. Yeah, we were, almost 8-9 months ago, we were asked by the B-Movie Celebration in Franklin, Indiana. We premiered the trailer of the movie there, or a teaser of the movie as we were editing it, at the film festival they have there. And immediately after that, they told us that they wanted the official rights to have the world premiere of the movie at the next B-Movie Celebration in Franklin, Indiana, and not to give it to anybody else. They wanted it, they were going to promote the shit out of it, all that kind of stuff. So we agreed for a couple of different reasons. It's not the biggest festival in the world, but we did film a major event that happens in the film.
Two, actually.
A couple. They're in Franklin, Indiana. One inside the theater that the film was going to be, that they wanted to screen the film in. So we said, well, that would be kind of a cool tie-in with the movie. So we agreed to do it. And, you know, been promoting the hell out of the premiere for months and months and months. And then it was probably a week and a half, 2 weeks before.
Almost 2 weeks.
Yeah, 2 weeks before the screening. The guy who runs the screening, Bill Dever, that runs the show, he went ahead and contacted us and said, no, we can't show this movie. We're going to have to edit it. If you want to cut, like, for it, then we'll screen it. And we said that was not the deal, because all we asked for in order to give them exclusive rights to show it in Franklin, Indiana, was that we wanted it played on Saturday night at the Artcraft Theater. That was all we asked for. That was what we were repeatedly guaranteed. And now he was going back on that. And I don't know what really caused it. You know, they said, well, it's just, they can't show it. It's too rough. You know, they had some bullshit excuse that it was because of the language and the nudity, but you've seen it, and you know there's nothing worse language-wise in an R-rated film, and there's about 15 seconds of comedy nudity in it. It's not even, like, real sexual nudity. So that was bullshit. You know, instead of just giving us the real reason or saying, look, we fucked up, we can't show it there, they proceeded to give us a lot of excuses like, oh, well, the mayor's involved and he's using public funds and blah, blah, blah.
The mayor?
All that. So he calls the mayor. We get the mayor on the phone. So we just finally went, you know, fuck this. And we pulled the film. Because they were banning it in the forum, which is funny because, you know, you've seen it. A lot of the movie involves our fight against censorship, and now they wanted to censor a movie about censorship.
The irony was rich.
So that's kind of the trouble we ran into. Now, since that time, a lot of stuff has come out. A lot of people have come forward with different stories about the festival and the people involved with the festival and all that kind of stuff, and a lot of shady dealings and that kind of stuff, and there's been jail time involved and blah, 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 a lot of stuff like that. It's all out there online. And so we probably did the right thing in the long run, and then, you know, we were guaranteed, you know, and it's been since that time we've kind of had that idea solidified in our mind that we did make the right choice, because now everyone wants to see the movie.
Yeah, it's a great publicity scheme if you guys had planned it.
Yeah, and it's funny because people contacted us right away. As soon as the news got out that they were trying to censor this film, we started getting emails and phone calls going, did you guys make this up? Because this sounds like something you would do.
Now, granted, we would pull shit like this normally, but even our buddy Carl, who we did theater with 20 years ago, when we were one, he emailed me immediately, goes, brilliant. Fucking brilliant, Brian. And I'm like, no, really, we're serious. I mean, it's like kind of like crying wolf, but we see, you know, when this all started going down, Jim and I definitely have a very productive, symbiotic relationship as far as our personalities go. And he called me basically saying, I want to tell this guy to go fuck himself. And I'm like, no, let's hold on, you know, because we were supposed to also host the weekend. This was, you know, that was the whole beauty of this, was not only when. After we agreed to show the movie there as our world theatrical premiere, then he came back to us not long after that and said, I want you guys to host the whole weekend. And that was going to include, you know, I had a little bit kind of kicking off the night because it was an invasion-themed weekend. And, you know, Jim and I were going to do panels and mediate interview segments. And then we were going to also host the Golden Cob Awards. And then we were going to host the Scream Queen Contest, which was going to be sponsored with Fangoria and all those other things that we're really excited about. And when all this started going down, I'm like, well, I don't want to go do this and then not show our movie. That's just, we had people flying in from multiple states paying all this money to come just to see this movie. And we're like, what about these people? You know, we can't just have them come here and not see the movie. So we tried for 4 straight days, and we kind of gave ourselves like till Friday, like Friday morning of that week. Because that was, I think, like a week out, I think, at that point. And we were, up until that Thursday night, we were trying everything, going, what can you do? And he's coming back saying, well, I could show it in a tent. And we're like, you're not showing it in a fucking tent. I can show it in my theater. And we're like, okay, well, where's this theater? Jim asked him. Oh, it's real nice. Well, how many people does it see? Well, I don't remember seeing a theater there other than the one. Because, I mean, Franklin, you can literally swing a cat and hit every building there. So, I mean, it's not that big. And Jim finds out that he goes, oh, it's in my office. It seats 25 people. I can seat 25 people in my living room if I really angle the chairs right. So that was definitely not an option. So then he said he wanted to put us at a college, Trinity College that was just around the street, Franklin College. Well, it's a Bible school, so certainly that's not going to play. And then he blamed that on parents' night, was interfering with it, which doesn't make sense because that's 8 to 1 in the afternoon. Then he, at the last gasp, he wanted to kick us out of Franklin and play it in Edinburgh, Indiana, which is like, I don't know, 20 minutes, 25 minutes away.
Like 20 miles away.
And we were like, no. that is absolutely not. And that's all he did. He just threw his hands up in the air and waited for us to basically back out. And we had to sadly do it. And the moment we did this, I got an idea in my head. I told Jim, like, okay, remember that Dixie Chicks picture where they were all pissed off and everybody got mad at them for what they said about the president? And all I said, we're going to fucking do that then. And we're not going to go away quietly. He doesn't know what kind of people Jim and I are. If you're going to do wrong us like that in a public forum like that, you have to be prepared. We're not petty, mean people, but we give what we get. And so, I mean, this great, yes, this was the best thing that could have happened because we didn't go there. And it turned out that the attendance of that thing was just dismal.
Because a lot of other people pulled their films and a lot of celebrities backed out and stuff like that. So it just kind of died at that point.
That picture you guys are referring to, I believe that was the poster that you guys had on Facebook, correct?
Yes.
Because the screener I got was just a DVD-R, so I didn't get artwork on my screener, you bastards.
Right.
Yeah, I'd actually did make a spec for the distributors to kind of use if they want to use or whatever. The original movie poster is just the hand. You know, the arm, my severed arm holding an original videotape of the very first four episodes of Underground Entertainment that we bumped off the 3/4-inch masters back in 1990. And, and then we decided to take that, put Band in Franklin, Indiana on it. And then we did the naked, thing with the American flag behind us, which I think was a touching move on my part.
Well, speaking of those first four episodes and that, do you guys actually own those? Would you ever put out a box set of your... all the episodes, if you could get them in decent quality?
We do own them. We have them directly from the masters. And it's funny. It was something we talked about when we first started venturing down this path about a year ago, talking through this and, talking about the documentary, how we're going to do it and everything. And I was like, we could put these out. And then we're like, I don't know if anybody would even want to see them. And then we just left it at that. And then you're about the, 12th, 13th person, I guess, since we've been screening, asking us if we would do that.
Because when I was watching the documentary, and I'm going to use the word documentary loosely, you guys know why. If you haven't,
all that old footage is true. That stuff is
I know, but I mean the narration and stuff is...
Well, the narration was real too. Those are real people doing it.
I swore I heard like a Stephen Hawking computer voice in there.
No, but he refused, actually.
Yeah, he did. So that was my dick doing an impression of him.
Ah. But
now Tim's cock is Stephen Hawking.
As I was watching it, I kept seeing all these clips and I kept going, I kind of would like to see the whole episode. And then I tried to, I admit it, I looked on torrent sites, God forbid, I thought somebody might have an old VHS copy that they recorded and uploaded, and I couldn't find any.
Good.
Well, we do have all of them, and we had discussed maybe doing a box set of all of them. We're torn a little bit because some of the material on it is very dated, especially some of the news segments and things like that, which might get boring. I don't know. Some people might like it.
I brought that up.
The hairstyles.
We just had a GMX in Nashville, and that was one of the things I said that we were talking about. And they went, no. We'd love to. It would be nostalgic. It would be like seeing old news clips of things. And I was like, okay, in that aspect, maybe.
Except I can't remember which one of you had a mullet. In
that
one of those, I remember seeing a couple of really hardcore mullets in there that just made me laugh my ass off.
Yeah, Brian had one most of the show. I had one occasionally.
I did cut the back of it in '91. I finally went to a friend of mine that was a hairdresser that was really good, and I just said, I think I need to lose the back part of this. And she got me normalfied, I guess, at that point. But it wasn't a mullet at the time. It was Andre Agassi hair. I remember seeing this ad. And I kind of went, and it was in vogue at the time. But, I mean, a true mullet is that buzz side and the really short wrestling, almost crew cut with the curly back and stuff. That's what I think of when I think of mullet. But having looked back on it now, I can see the similarities. I purposely tried to make my hair bigger than it really should have been, because I would jump into the bathroom real quick before we'd go on the air, and I'd go, Jim, come here, which is always not gay anyway. And I'd grab a hair dryer and mousse and spray, and I would flip my hair down. I'd like lean down so my hair was like, it was like upside down. I'd spray the shit out of it, blow dry it, and then flip it up again and look like a racer head and go, how's this?
At least you didn't have a rat tail.
No, I never did that.
I'm 36, so I grew up in the era of the rat tail, and I Thank God I never had one. I always had long hair, but just straight long hair.
Yeah.
I'm one of those.
That's fine. No, that's fine. And so, yeah, the hair thing was, and that's kind of fun to watch too, I guess. And it's more of like a what not to do, I think, for today's youth.
It is. It's a warning.
Yes.
It's a warning.
Yes. Just now everybody has like the Beetle Bieber. That's a better trend.
Well, all right. After watching the documentary, you guys interviewed a whole bunch of quote unquote celebrities. Who was the biggest dick? Not who has the biggest dick, who was the biggest dick?
One that we didn't put in the movie.
Yeah.
Because he was a dick.
Yeah. In 1991, he was a dick.
And he's still a dick.
Yeah.
That would be Jonathan Frakes.
Yeah.
Really?
He was the biggest dick. Star Trek Next Generation was the number one show at the time when he came on our show. That's okay because I got him. He got me later. Well, I'll tell you the story real quick. we got Jonathan Frakes. He's married to Jeannie Francis from General Hospital. Luke and, you know, the old Luke and Laura story from General Hospital. And she is a sweetheart. Super, super sweet.
Wonderful.
So they came on, and he would not allow her close to the cameras. So we wanted to get her on too, but he would not allow that. I think she wanted to.
She was next to me during the shoot. We had our cameraman going, and I was kind of just overseeing everything, just making sure everything was going okay. And I'm standing there, and we were just kind of talking because we're far enough away where, you know, we were kind of conversing a little bit. And I was like, "Oh, we love your work, and we love what you do." And she's like, and she was really, really. Jim was right. Jim O'Rear was right. She was really, really nice. And I had just said, and she said, "You guys seem like fun." And I said, "We are, you know." And at this point, I keep looking at the couch where Jim and Jonathan are on, and I'm like, "Wow, Jonathan hasn't smiled once since we started." But I wasn't really paying much attention. I wasn't really listening to what was going on. And I said, "We'd love to get you to do an intro." She goes, "Oh, I'd love to." Well, then Jim starts interviewing Jonathan. He hits him right off the bat with this tidbit, and this is probably what started the entire downward spiral right away. Because again, remember, Jonathan Frakes has an ego, and he is, like you said, he's not fucking Next Generation. And then he hits him with,
yeah, and part of the reason he was already being a dick is why I did this. I said, "So, Jonathan, why don't you tell us about all those years that you ran around in tights dressed as Captain America handing out Marvel comic books in New York?" And we got him on film going, "Oh."
And he smiled, and then the smile disappeared. And then the rest of the fucking interview, he never smiled.
Because I wanted him to know and remember where he came from.
And he didn't want any part of it.
Because he was being such a dick.
At the end of the interview, Jim goes, "Hey, maybe we can get Jeannie to..." No.
Yeah.
And then he got up and left. So yeah, we didn't. Unless he died, we weren't gonna put him in the movie. So
now it came back on me. I realized that he remembered that just a couple years ago, because I was up for the role of Dracula in the third Librarian movie with Noah Wiley, and they I had auditioned for it and everything like that, and they were very interested and they wanted to talk to me, and it was going to go in front of the director. It was about time for the director to decide, and it was narrowed down, and I asked, "Well, who's the director?" And they said, "Jonathan Frakes." And I said, "No fucking way in hell am I going to get it then." And sure enough, I didn't, but but that's okay.
Do you think it was because he remembered you, or just he favored, I never watched that series, so I don't even know who played it.
Probably not. It probably doesn't have anything to do with that. I like to think that it does, just because it reminds me that I pissed him off. But I don't know. Who knows? I don't know if the man holds a grudge or not. I never wanted to speak to him again afterwards.
He seems grudge holding.
He does. But I hear that he's still just as big a dick as he was.
Yeah, so. He's a good director though. He does direct some good stuff. Yeah. I'll give him that. But he's just an impossible person to deal with.
I wonder if he would get along with Jeffrey Combs. Since Jeffrey Combs was the second choice for Riker.
Well, Jeffrey Combs is too nice to get along with John.
Yeah. And then obviously the biggest dick in the film was, well, you know, Jim, myself, and Ron Jeremy.
Exactly.
So,
Ron Jeremy definitely had the biggest dick in the film.
Yeah.
Well, all right, then who was the nicest person that you interviewed?
Oh, there's so many. Really, almost everybody. I mean, I know that's a wishy-washy answer, but, I mean,
Yeah, we've never run into anybody that we haven't liked other than Jonathan Frakes and Linda Lavin.
Forgot about Linda Lavin.
Other than those two, we've always had great fun with everybody, and we've kept long-standing relationship with these people. I mean, we've known some of these people for years and years and years and years. You know, normally they go on a show and they do an interview and they never speak to the people again. You know, it's just another appearance, another job, another plug. But I don't know, we ended up having some type of chemistry. We made their time fun. They remembered it. We usually tried to do different things with them that hadn't been done before. Everybody has just been super, super nice and giving. And I mean, hell, you can see in the movie, there's 80 some celebrities in the movie, and every one of them wanted to do it. You know, they were just like, just tell me what you want me to do. I'll do whatever you want me to do.
And very few, and even ones like we didn't already know, and we'd have to go over and cold basically give them the elevator pitch on, you know, what if we wanted to have them do something. They, once we told them the concept, they were like, oh, like one guy, I remember one goes, get the camera. Yeah, and then, and like Tom Savini, you know, I don't even know if we hadn't even asked him yet. You know, Jim's worked with him a bunch of times, so we didn't even tell him like what we were up to or whatever. We're going to, but you know, because he was kind of near us at the Famous Monster show, but we thought, well, we'll just kind of let him do his thing. And then we get Ernie fucking Hudson, who was just brilliant. If you look, Jim on the IMDb called Tom Savini interrupting Tom because he keeps butting in. Mm-hmm. And it was
I wasn't sure if that was scripted or if that was all ad lib.
No! Oh, yes, I wrote all of that out. Talking in the movement.
The person that was speaking, like Ernie Hudson and stuff like that, that was scripted, but the interrupting was not. Tom was just having so much fun with it and watching everybody have so much fun that he wanted to be a part of it. So he just kept coming in and ad-libbing with him, and we just let him go.
Which is a testament to how good Ernie Hudson is, because that son of a bitch only read what I wrote for him like a second before, yeah. And he still retained everything despite being distracted by this crazy Savini guy. So, yeah, everybody just had a great time. Like Robert Englund was, you know, Jim, you know, had just called him. I just fucking love saying call Robert Englund. But Robert Englund, you know, he was like, oh, I'd love to. You know, and we were just trying to figure out where and when, and we found this perfect storm where, you know, I had a freebie ticket to use, and Robert Englund was going to be in New York City getting a kind of like a Lifetime Achievement Award, which is kind of weird because he's still got so much work left in him, but he was going to be in New York City in November of last year, and then at the same time, so, you know, Jim's worked with Lloyd Kaufman, and we've actually both done a movie with him. So we're able to call him and kind of go, okay, well, let's work this out. So I called Lloyd and talked to him about, you know, okay, the where and the when. I said, well, I'll be doing Robert Englund first and then you, which sounds really gay. And then I flew up there, went and spent an hour and a half with Robert Englund, and it was just awesome. I mean, just what a nice, nice, super fun, cool, sweet guy. And then I got a cab, and then I go hang out with Lloyd Kaufman at his house. Again, what a nice, nice, super sweet guy.
And Lloyd Kaufman has sex with your dolls.
Well, repeatedly. And that's, I'm glad you brought that up, because the one dark side of the film is the dolls have been going through, I don't know if you saw it in the credits, but it's no bullshit. They've been going through a lot of therapy, because what Lloyd did to them
Out of a Lifetime movie, what Lloyd did to them?
What's that?
Was it like something out of a Lifetime movie, what Lloyd did to them?
No. That would be the Hollywood version. This would be more like one of those brutal Honey, I Blew Up Your Asshole movies. You know, it was just really...
Yeah, more like Last House on the Left, kind of.
Combined yeah. with...
I Spit on Your Grave.
Yeah, combined with Dirt Pipe Milkshake, I think would be a good description. The dolls didn't speak afterwards. They just sat catatonically, you know, after Lloyd. So they haven't really opened up about it. So
I'm sure they were opened up after Lloyd was done.
Not at the time, but we got them sewed back up. The stuffing is still, you know, put back in, and you know, we don't like to talk about it. I mean, look at them. I mean, I don't know if you can see, you can't see this, but
you guys do know this is an audio interview, right?
It is an audio interview.
That's right. So you can't see them.
But if you can imagine, just like V. Lloyd Brown, I just kind of imagine them, you know, in your sight right now. And they just still have that blank expression on their face. So, you know, it is one of those things. But, you know, I think they'll be better off for it, because to be honest, they were really prudish for the most part, I thought.
So you think this is going to change the dolls sexually?
I hope so, because they seemed a bit stuffy.
pun. Well, all right. Then, is there any celebrity you tried to get and for whatever reason couldn't? I don't mean for the movie, because I know about the Munchkin dying. I mean for the actual show.
That was not bullshit. That was true. That pissed me off. Fuck. I'd located him, because I was doing all these, because when I was doing the kind of pre-planning for all this, I started doing all these searches for, you know, who was still around. I'm IMDb-ing, and I'm, you know, just going through Wikipedia and seeing who's still alive and who's not and all that stuff. So, and I thought, well, we got to get Meinhard Robbie, because I'd heard he was in Florida, and son of a bitch, he's at an old nursing home in Orange Park. I went, brilliant. And then I'd already gotten Jim's scheduled flight, you know, to come down to Florida so we could film all of our Florida stuff and everything. We had Maria, our little hottie camera girl, coming up from Miami, and everything was, you know, good to go. And we were going to go do a road trip there. And then days before the goddamn newspaper, I looked down. I'm actually with Bob Bauer, our director, and I was with him before we were going to go over and shoot with everybody. And I just went over there to grab lunch, because I hadn't seen him in like 16, 17 years. And I just looked down at the newspaper, and it says, like, last Wizard of Oz Munchkin dies. And I'm like, tell me that fucking bastard didn't die. And I was so pissed. And I'm like, Jim, you're not going to fucking believe it. Because part of our day was to drive to Jacksonville and to get him. And I was just furious.
So, okay, besides him, is there any celebrities you were not able to get for the show?
Yes, yes, yes. Now, for the show or the movie or both?
Both.
Okay, for the show, and as you saw in the movie, we had arranged, I believe we'd arranged, usually on the show when we got celebrities, and back then it wasn't easy to get celebrities, because you had, you didn't have the internet, you didn't have power, you didn't have the things you do today, and you didn't have that many conventions. You had like one or two a year in a geographical region of the United States, and that means like in I guess in St. Pete, Tampa, we had like SunCon, mm-hmm. and there usually weren't that many great guests there. There was kind of very marginally like inkers of Batman, but we got them on there because we were geeks. And then the big nuts were in usually Orlando once a year, and that was at a toy show of all things. And then Atlanta Fantasy Fair, which is now Dragon Con. The first year we went, we had everything kind of arranged, and they knew who we were by, you know, via mail, and we sent them copies of the tape, so they saw we weren't just fucking around, and even though that's all we did. And, you know, we got everybody we wanted to get. Well, the next year, we go up to Atlanta, everybody knows who we are. So we got there, and everybody's like, well, rolling out the red carpet, and I was supposed to get Dean Stockwell. That was one of my big interviews, and he fucking canceled, and I got Butch Patrick, and Jim had already interviewed Butch Patrick, and we weren't pissed. It was, damn it, you know, because I wanted to interview Dean Stockwell, because Quantum Leap was really big at the time. And so Butch and I had like a really almost homoerotic interview, if I remember correctly. I haven't seen it in a long time, but I just remember it was really out of hand, and it was just really weird, because there wasn't much to talk about, because we had just interviewed him like 6 months earlier. But we were supposed to get Marina Sirtis from Star Trek Next Generation, and she turned all it really wasn't just us, I think it was all media, if I remember correctly, mm-hmm. turned everybody down. We were pissed.
Is that why you guys went on your rant about why Deanna Troi was the most useless Next Generation crew member?
Yes, we were very petty and spiteful, and we haven't gotten much better. So, I was still very seriously annoyed about that. So when I was doing the going across the internet, I found that picture of some advert with her looking half liquored up. Great rack. I mean, she still looked pretty hittable, but she just looked like she'd just fallen off the face of the earth. So that was a built-in gag. But for the show, I think that was the only one. I don't think there was anybody really.
I think that same year with Dean Stockwell, Tom Savini also canceled.
Yes.
Because he was working on in another film in Two Evil Eyes or something like that.
Yeah.
So those were the only two. But you know, we got Tom later. I got to work with him in some films later, and then we got him for the movie. Now for the movie, we wanted because and you see one clip in the movie of a dog pissing on Vanilla Ice. We repeatedly took shots at Vanilla Ice on the TV show as much as we could. You know, all kinds of different things. We destroyed so many Vanilla Ice trading cards and everything.
What happened was we were showing all these genre things, so I was showing trading cards. And I wrote a letter on paper. It's a pro set. I remember football cards. Pro set used to do football cards, and then they started doing like all these weird cards. So I showed them. I had Jim, and I edited a couple of scenes of me showcasing those cards. Then they all of a sudden, like about 4 months later, I get this box of just random cards, and I open them up, and there's like a box of unopened music cards, rock cards, classic cards, soap opera cards. It was just a bunch of shit. It was like Christmas. So I was like, Jim, you're not gonna believe this. We got all this shit. Well, in the music cards, they had Vanilla Ice. And I went, really? Vanilla Ice? I mean, he ripped off Queen a riff and that's it? And that constitutes a fucking card? And then I saw he was being kind of a dick in the press. So I went, fuck this guy. So we started having contests and I said, I want you to write in. We had viewer mail. We used to have literally go to the post office box and open up and there would be letters jammed in there from viewers. Now, granted, we had like the same couple of people that would consistently write, but we had a lot of different people write in. And I had a contest of destroy the vanilla. What are the top three ways we should destroy the Vanilla Ice cards? And the winner gets a Lionel Richie card. And we had a ton of responses. So we filmed the top three responses, and one of them was having dog piss on him. And I was telling Jim we should try to get him. Yeah, I think he's in Miami, and we were going to go to Miami anyway because we were going to try to get Linnea Quigley, which we got for another film, which is good. We'll talk about in a second. But I talked to Tommy Kwan was his name, the manager, if you will, out of Dallas, Texas, and I'm talking to him on the phone, going, "Okay, we want to get Vanilla Ice in a quick cameo." And he goes, "Well, Mr. Ice, he really needs like a fee."
Does he actually go by Mr. Ice?
I know, I'm thinking Van Winkle. You know,
yeah.
Mr. Ice, really. So he says he wants a fee, and I went, "Well, I'll be honest with you. Everybody that's in this movie is kind of doing this on, just on pro bono, basically, because they love this. It's, you know, we don't know what this film could do, but he will be attached to a movie with so and so, so and so, so and so at the time, because we end up getting a bunch of names afterwards. But at the time, it's still pretty impressive." And I'm thinking, what the fuck is he doing anyway? What gives a shit? We're coming to you. And I had this really great gag where he could get back at us. He's going to be the fucking winner in this. We got Vanilla Ice doing a great gag, doing something out of character, and he's the winner. And they just kept putting me off. And then what did he do? He's doing a reality show.
Yes.
And I'm like, really? About what? And he wouldn't tell me. And then he said he finished the reality show. And I'm like, Jim goes, what, they finished it all in a morning? I mean, it just... So he never got in the movie because we had a whole side gag with that. That would have been brilliant. And but, you know, maybe we'll get him the next time. But then we find out, just as a side note, I don't know if you saw this, but he ended up doing home repairs and basically doing, like, Trading Spaces home improvement shows.
I only watch straight guy shows, sorry.
Well, that's a good thing because otherwise you would have been saddled with watching Vanilla Ice go into these fucking ridiculously big homes in South Beach and wallpaper bathrooms. I'm not shitting you.
Yeah, he...
I bet there wasn't as many moments where you could have Meatloaf freaking out on Gary Busey, huh?
No, actually, we wanted to get Gary Busey, but he canceled at one of the shows, and we had a couple of things for him, but, you know, we'll run into him at some point. But Vanilla Ice was one. And then the second one, which is actually going to be, and I'm going to fight like a fucker to get him in the next film we're going to do. Should I tell him?
Sure.
Richard Simmons. Because Richard Simmons, to me, is one of the funniest fucking people on the planet anyway. But we had this gag back in the day, and this is a true story. This whole bit on the show, an entire show was devoted to this stupid thing. Oh, God. Because... When Jim and I were living together at one point, he had his answering machine, and we like to make funny answering machine messages, and we would come home, and it'd be like 40 messages of people just hanging up. Like, it'd be one real call, and then people would go, "You gotta hear this," and then it would just all these hang-ups, so... I said, I don't know what the hell possessed me to think this. Oh, we're watching the talk shows, because at that point, Elvis was supposedly alive, and women were going on talk shows with proof of the phone calls and all that shit. So I was like, okay, so Elvis is alive, and he's trying to assassinate Richard Simmons. Here's proof. And I have Jim going, "Let's do some jumping jacks. I'm going to kill you, Richard." Oh. And that was it. And we thought that was kind of funny. And we got a chance to go on a helicopter ride all over Pinellas County and Tampa and everything from one of our buddies, John Monks, who actually sadly did pass away. We went, we got to use this. So then we got this dumb idea of, I know, we're on the hunt for Elvis trying to save Richard Simmons. So that whole thing started. So we want to get Richard Simmons involved. Plus, we have another couple of things that are more pertinent for him now. That makes sense. So I just haven't been able to get through to him. I've emailed him through his site. I've contacted him through Facebook, and I've gotten no response. So
well, if he asks for some kind of payment, you can always pay him out of the back end. As long as he doesn't try and cram it down your throat.
I'm talking about ass sex, my friend. If you get my... So, yeah. So those are the only two people I think that off the top of our heads that I can think
I wonder what his eye color is. Do you think he has big brown eyes?
He will when we're done. He's about to.
So, don't tell me a little bit about your Linnea Quigley thing, because I've been trying to get her for this show, but no matter what happens, our schedules cannot lock up. Whenever she's available, I'm not. Whenever I'm available, she's not. It's ridiculous.
Well, it was really because of our schedule this time. I mean, I've known Linnea for years and years and years. I've done two or three films with her. And because we were shooting in Florida, and you know, the movie, a portion of the movie in Florida, and she lived there, I said, if we've got time, let's just drive over to Linnea's house and shoot some stuff. And I called Linnea, and she was all for it. She was home and all that. But because of the amount of stuff we had to cram into the number of days that we had in Florida, we just weren't able to drive over there, or she would be in the movie. But we did just film her for a future one just a couple of weeks ago. Yeah.
You know, you guys should have made a documentary about making the documentary about your old show.
Isn't that funny?
Get totally meta. Is that what the next movie's about?
Yes, it's funny you mention that.
And by the way, for the listeners, we did not pre-plan this. They haven't talked to me about this.
Nope, this is all... this is not bullshit.
Well, because my co-host Scott, who's not here tonight, my normal co-host, he came up with a brilliant reality show idea. You follow around people shooting reality shows. You have a reality show based on shooting the people shooting another reality show. I think that's absolutely brilliant.
They sort of did that, except not reality, but you know, Oprah had that thing where they followed around the people filming her, making her TV show.
I saw one on the NFL too, that they followed around the guys that went that shot the NFL games. But still, I think it'd be...
When all this stuff started going down with the when the whole not being able to show our movie as originally planned in Indiana started going down, that's when the light bulb started going off in my head and going, all right, fuck this. If he wants to play hardball, how about this? And I started throwing some ideas at Jim. Jim's going, yes. And then what about this? I'm going, yes. You know, so it was just this big yes fest between us. And so, yeah, we are actually working on how many fucking documentaries? Not only do they have three alternate endings, but how many documentaries have a sequel? So we are actually, people joked about it. We joked about it because the movie is rather, you know, the running time is a little longer than a standard movie, but we said we should just make a sequel to it, and we could have made two movies out of it. But there's a second movie being developed now. We've already shot footage for it and gotten scenes put together, and it's basically going to be a direct, right where the first one left off. We're picking it right back up.
Yeah, we've probably 10, 12 celebrities.
And when we told them, and some that haven't been in the first one, we were telling some of them, and again, these are some celebrities we've never worked with, and we just pitched to them, and they're like, get the camera. And we shot it right away, and so there, everybody's on board. That I think that's the beauty of all this, is the people that were, I don't know, not the haters, but the negative energy people that, you know, were around, you know, they're pretty much whittled out, and all the true friends and the true, you know, the people that are real, you know, cohorts and colleagues and friends and professional, you know, relationships, I guess, are they're with us, and that everybody's just so supportive, and they're like, fuck it, whatever you want. So we're definitely going to take, you know, strike while the iron's hot, and put this together as quickly and methodically as possible.
If you guys want to use any audio from this, as long as you credit the show, I could always use new listeners.
Absolutely, yes.
I could always use new listeners, because the five I've got aren't cutting it anymore.
No, we are very gracious on anybody that helps us out, and you know, we always like to give back and tenfold, you know, because You know, you can't do stuff like this by yourself. I mean, you can, but it's just really impossible.
You know? Well, and, you know, in all honesty, putting aside all the joking, when I heard about the documentary, I thought, okay, this is interesting. Yes, I've never heard of the show, and yes, it's part of the joke of the documentary. But I was really interested in those old clips that you were showing during the show. I love that sort of, you know, I don't know what kind of financial backing you had, but it very much felt like a do-it-yourself public access kind of thing. And I don't mean that as an insult. I don't mean the public access thing as an insult. That's the thing I've been trying to do for years, and you guys succeeded at it, and you kind of put me in my place, and it made me both nostalgic and angry at you.
Yeah, it was very much do-it-yourself. I mean, it was, you know, it was a commercial show on a commercial station. We did have to raise money and get sponsors to keep it on. Luckily, the station owners and everything were more than willing to work with us, just because they believed in the show. They liked the show. The show was popular. It was generating mail and viewers and things like that. So they did let us slide. I'm sure we still probably owe them money.
We have to. And we did share the studio set. That particular soundstage, there were some public access shows shot in the corners of that same show. So that was one of the things. We didn't have a permanent stage, so I mean, we did, it was that same studio, but we had to share that with a lot of people. So it did, we would do the best we fucking could to make it not look like every other show, because everybody else would put, like, you know, whether it was like our director even had a Blab show, is what it was called, Blab TV, and he had a fake bricks that were like rolled in the back, or people would just do,
you gotta catch fake bricks in a plant,
man. There it is, there's your stud. So that's why when we would go on there, we would spend, god, Jim would be talking to Bob about the rundown of the show, I would go in with all the shit, and every week we had a different, everything had to be taken, we had to set it up and tear it down the same day. And when we would shoot the whole show in a day, and then it would air, you know, that week. And then sometimes we would shoot a couple shows back to back if we knew we were going to be out of town, and we would you know, basically have to kind of forecast the news, basically. And there was a lot of news on there. There was a lot of comic book news, there was a lot of sci-fi news, there was a lot of horror news. We showed a lot of movie trailers of movies that hadn't been coming out yet, and old classic commercials, or, you know, it was just like a hodgepodge of geek horror, sci-fi, underground genre, cult shit.
Yeah, and stew. And it was, you know, it was pretty much just Brian and I doing it. So when you say, you know, it's kind of a do-it-yourself deal, yeah, we were writing it, we were filming it, we were editing it.
Selling it.
Yeah, we were selling it. Everything was pretty much us. We had a couple other people that pitched in here and there, but it was primarily our baby, and we would get a lot of it ready ourselves outside the studio, just save time and money while we were in the studio.
Well, and, you know, not to get egotistical, I tried that with my horrible show, It Came From Beyond Midnight, which was made for local TV but never made it. Big story behind that, but I ended up putting them on the internet. And I did that too. I wrote them, I directed them, I picked the movies, I sold the advertising, I got the set built, you know, I mean, I arranged for the set to get built, I arranged to get the cameras there. Basically, the only thing I didn't do was appear as my own co-host.
Yeah, it's a ton of work, and on top of that, you know, when you're doing it that way and you're making your own show, you know, what people don't think about is, okay, well, now I've also got to handle all the advertising, all the marketing, all the press. And, you know, if it was easy, everybody would be doing it, though.
Exactly. And it's hard to, you know, people go, oh, you know, it's so, you know, that's so cool. And, you know, I'd have friends of mine from high school, you know, graduation, they would like call me going, I just saw you at 2:00 in the afternoon after high school football. Because this is where they put us, after high school football on a Saturday. And this was in St. Pete. Now, because everything was different then, and cable wasn't like all universal as far as, like, you know, like if you have Comcast, it's on Comcast, like nationwide. It's not, it wasn't like that then. It was like we had three cable companies in Pinellas County alone, two in Tampa, you know, so, and they all ran different times. But we knew when in St. Pete, where it originated from, at the Paragon Studios under Paragon Cable, that audience, which was most of St. Pete, would get it at a certain time. And they put us on at 2:00 in the, they would show our show twice a week. So that way it gave people two times a chance to watch it. This was great. 6:00 on Thursday. Now, back then, you had channel dials on your TV, or you had, like, you had, like, your numbers. Like, if you used your remote, you didn't do what you do today. I mean, it's like you didn't have a digital remote, I don't think, then. Mm. I think you could just change your channel up one, up yeah, one, up down. So our two big C and NBC channels were 10 and 8. They put Paragon's channel was 9. So they put us on at 6 o'clock, right when the evening news would start. So on a Thursday, if you're flipping, you know, from 10 to 9, 8, you're going to see our intro. And that's what made us do. And that's the other reason that when you asked about the old shows, our intros were very, what's the word?
We're pirated.
Well, they were pirated. Yeah. So we basically asked for forgiveness, not permission, because we didn't know who to ask. I mean, so we would show these great intros with like anime, and we ended up getting a theme song put together. So that was one thing we'd have to worry about copyright wise. But, you know, we would have these outrageous intros to catch people's attention. And that's where we got a lot of viewers. People would go, I was flipping the channels and I saw this weird shit, then I just couldn't stop watching it. And that was it. And then at 2 o'clock on Saturday, we followed high school football where all the kids were watching. So that's where they would mostly see it. So we had a very good time slot in St. Pete. Everywhere else it went, and we know it's gone as far as Alaska. People keep coming up to us and saying, I saw your show, and we're like, where were you? We're like, North Dakota. You know, but they did. So
yeah, the screening even this past weekend when we screened in Nashville, we had some people come up to us and say, I remember you guys. I watched you guys all the time, and I remember some of those old clips in the movie. So it's you know, it just, we know it played all over. We just can't tell you exactly where or when.
Which is why you guys need to put out a box set. How many episodes are there total of the original show?
59, including one live show we did.
All right, you guys, they can't be that difficult to find some sort of distribution deal, can it?
I don't know. I mean, that's the thing. It'd be hard to find someone. I mean, I think it would depend on the success of two things. One, if we get a distribution deal that works for us, that gets the movie out, it gets it out to an audience, and the movie takes off, and whether it's in a download form or a video on demand form or anything like that. And then we are working feverishly, and we've already shot time sensitive footage for, we're bringing Underground Entertainment back as a television show, and we've got a couple of places where we know it would just fucking work. If that happens, or when that happens, because I'm not taking no for an answer, when that happens, I think people's interest might be more sparked by that. Then a distributor might look and go, that might be profitable. But until then, I don't really see it working unless it was self-distributed.
Yeah, because the other problem we faced with those is it was shot all analog, all on tape. The tapes are not in that great shape anymore. And because of the quality control standards now, of duplication and broadcasting and everything like that, they almost won't touch anything that's not HD anymore.
Oh, fuck that. Haven't you guys seen the Midnight Blue DVDs that have been put out? Al Goldstein's old show? have you guys ever seen the disclaimer at the beginning? It says, these are
suck.
Yeah, it says, these are taken from the original masters, but you can't shine shit, so you get what you get.
Right. And then, Well, I think it's going to be interest-based, and we have enough. We're going to look at it. Jim and I really, right now, we've been actively discussing ways around that to appease the folks like yourself and the ones that are like, I want to fucking see this, you know. So, you know, we'll definitely, because there's a lot of things in the show that that did not make it in the film, you know, that you know, we're trying to use in the sequel. And even in a new series, we always were going to try to, like, have a classic clip moment, you know, kind of going back and pay homage to our roots, so, as it were.
And to remember your hair.
Yes, I know.
All right, we got a minute and a half left. Do you guys want to plug anything before you go? And
yes,
I don't mean in a sexual sense.
Oh.
I would say, and there's so much we've got going on right now, it won't fit in a minute and a half. So what I would recommend is going to SIBstudios.com.
S is in Sam, I is in...
Idiot.
B is in boobies.
Studio.com. And that is kind of a hub for all of our stuff, which includes Underground Entertainment, the movie, the series, Celebrity Ghost Hunters,
The Trinity of Pain.
There's news about you know, appearances we're doing, other films we're working on, and there are also links on there to our personal websites and Facebook pages. And things like that. So that's probably the easiest way just to catch up on everything that we're doing is sibstudios.com.
That's where by name.
So you, if you go to sibstudios.com, that's where to send you guys viruses, right?
Yes, that would be awesome.
Yes.
All Thank right. You. Well, on that note, I'm saying goodnight. You can contact me at lostinthestaticshow@gmail.com, and you don't need to contact them because nobody cares.
Exactly.
Nice, yes.
Good night.
Thank good you, night. Josh.